Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover and Lucy Milazzo. Cambridge 105
Radio. What action do we need to take to save the planet, and how do we get everyone on board? It's one of the questions of many at the Festival of Ideas next month, tickets for which were released yesterday. Shiloh Fennell is Senior Lecturer in Development Studies at the Department of Land Economy. Her session is Super Grains. Are they as super as they could be? And she joins us this morning. Good morning, Shiloh. Thank you for coming in. Welcome to Cambridge Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me on a rather rainy day. Let's hope the coffee cheered me up, so thank you very much.
See, we may not have the seating here, and we do have the coffee still. That always stays here. So what part does the food that we eat actually play in climate change?
So two parts to that answer. The first is obviously whenever we grow something, the positive of that is that we absorb carbon dioxide and the plants convert that into food, which is saying, yay, so this is climate positive. On the other hand, the way in which we grow food, particularly since the Industrial Revolution, we use both extensive methods of agriculture. So we have large fields, we have intensive ways of, you know, raising heads of cattle. All of these put one large number of chemicals into the soil, which are really good in terms of feeding ourselves. But we have to think about the consequences. So when we use pesticides, they can wash away into the field and go into the rivers, and that can cause, you know, algae formation and greening, which is not so good. But on the bigger question, it's actually the value chain of food that we grow. So a lot of what we grow eat is not what we grow, it's stuff that we buy in supermarkets. So the most obvious link is, how far does your food come? And what's the carbon footprint of your food?
Yeah.
And how many more times is that carbon footprint greater than the amount of carbon that was absorbed in the first place to grow your food?
This is interesting because it could turn into a long, complicated story if I'm not too careful. But I went to a different supermarket to pick up some stuff. Now, supermarket A will have stuff which is labelled as being grown in Cambridgeshire. But as far as I understand, this particular supermarket sends the stuff from Cambridgeshire up to Nottinghamshire somewhere and then back again. And then the other supermarket, I think, was just having stuff from, I don't know, I forget exactly where now, but it's, let's say, you know, the North East Midlands or somewhere. And it was labelled as that and had come to the supermarket in Cambridge. Now, makes me wonder which is the good one and which is the bad one there.
So I think one of our challenges, particularly when we're thinking of, is it 1.5 degrees or 3.7 degrees, is I think good and bad is really problematic. I think kind of looking inwards, everything that we do as human beings in terms of thinking about ecology is going to affect the environment, and everything that happening in the environment is affecting us. And that's what, in terms of thinking about it as a complex issue, it is symbiotic. We interact with each other, we affect each other, both human beings and nature. However, what's the really interesting question is, what is the consequence of most things we do? So at the moment, there's a lot of discussion of being zero or carbon neutral, the idea of moving towards zero. And I think for that, we have to understand, as you rightly said, is something grown local, but what does that mean? So in our research, we're looking at millets. Millets is like another unknown cereal, like, see, quinoa.
And there's not one we hear mentioned
no,
that
often.
No,
but we hear sorghum and we associate it with beer.
Okay.
So if you're thinking of going to a trendy beer outfit, and they, especially from South Africa, you might have beer which is brewed from sorghum. So the interesting thing about these crops, and the reason that you might see them on the health shelf if you're not buying beer, because they're gluten-free. So they're very interesting because they're really important in terms of people with particular kinds of food intolerances. However, they're very, very important in relation to climate change because they can both withstand more heat than, say, wheat or rice. They can probably go up to 45 or 46 degrees, and that's very high temperatures. They also traditionally have been grown in Africa, in Asia, like quinoa is grown in Latin America, and they take much less water. So they're a crop for the future. And they're also grown in areas where they're grown as a subsistence crop or a poverty crop, and women grow them. So the question really is, every time you ask me, you know, is it a good thing or a bad thing? Quinoa is a great thing because we can eat it, it's healthy. There have, however, been questions about the implications of it for local farmers in South Africa and Peru growing it. Not all of them have come out of poverty. And this goes straight to the heart of the Extinction Rebellion, all these issues. Are we being globally equitable? We share the same problem, but in its solution, are we being globally equitable?
So I wonder, because you're talking about crops that we could grow and and are more friendly or easier to grow in a warmer climate. But isn't the problem that we need to avoid getting to that warmer climate in the first place by making better food choices?
That's a really good question. And so one of the things on this big project we have, which is the Global Challenges Research Fund Tigris Project, nothing to do with tigers, though they are related to issues of extinction. The project really is looking at, and the questions we're asking is, yes, what do we grow? And can we grow foodstuffs that are less demanding of natural resources? So we've got to grow, we've got to eat, unless we're going to grow our own meat, which apparently is possible, or go away from meat. We've got lots of possible solutions. What we've got to think of is, if we grew millets or if we bought quinoa, is that total carbon footprint and the water footprint going to be less than something else? And it can't be done. You can't say, well, I had that for breakfast, I've done my good deed for the day, the rest of the day I can do something else. So in a sense, it's requiring each of us to think of our own footprint, both in terms of carbon and water, and what we want to eat. I mean, a shortcut would be just eat oats that come from Scotland.
Yeah.
Right? That could be another way of thinking of it.
And oats aren't bad for breakfast either. I wonder also, because some people would say there's an argument which is basically, by buying these crops, which have been imported from overseas, we are actually maybe looking after a family because their business depends on that. They're exporting overseas, and as a result, people are, I wouldn't say necessarily taken out of poverty, but their lives are made better as a consequence of that. Is there a reasonable argument for that? Or should we be purely looking at, this is going to impact on the carbon footprint, I need to choose this over this?
That's a very important question. I think that would make supermarket shopping a little more thought-provoking on a Saturday morning. I think what's really interesting is when you think of that, yes, I mean, obviously, farmers' incomes going up from what they produce is at the core of sustainable agriculture. And in the initial stages when quinoa was grown, it's not that we shouldn't purchase quinoa from another country, say Peru in this case. It's, are we sure that the process of purchase and transfer of incomes ensures that a very important crop has at least part of that value going to those farmers? So, for example, let's take the case of millets. It's an interesting one because even in the countries it's grown, so we're working in Gambia, Ethiopia and India, it's, as I said, was considered a poverty crop, especially after the Industrial Revolution and in the last 70 years in these countries, rice, polished rice, so white rice and polished wheat is what people want to eat. And even the communities that grow it now sell it to middle classes in their own countries or globally who've become more health conscious. And they then purchase the polished rice and the, you know, processed wheat. So there are issues about their own health. So there's one is improved income. And I agree with you. It does make a positive impact if farmers can be brought in productively into global value chains. But we've also got to think about their own nutrition and what happens to them. So sorry for a bit of early morning, lots of complex issues, but complex, I think, makes us more thoughtful rather than just making simple statements.
No, it's a trouble. My trips to the supermarket just get more and more complicated. this is the problem we have.
Tell us a little bit. So this is maybe the first time that you've done the Festival of Ideas.
This is the first time we've used the Festival of Ideas to talk about this project.
Right.
Because this project, which is called Milneti, the idea of millets and using fortified iron, we're actually going beyond just growing food. We're thinking about growing food that is more effective for nutrition, so maybe grow less, get better results. So in many countries, as a consequence of poor nutrition and food, people are anemic. So they eat, but they're unable to absorb the iron even in the products they eat.
And it's a great opportunity, isn't it, Festival of Ideas, to show your work off, as it were, and let people like myself, Lucy, and everybody listening get a taste of the kind of research at the university which can basically benefit our everyday lives.
Absolutely. We think it's a wonderful opportunity. So when we were approached, we were just in the process of beginning our fieldwork, and we said, sure, it's not often academics want to talk publicly. Even this radio show made me a little bit nervous. But once you start talking, you realise actually, in relation to a particular issue, everyone has ideas, and once you have a conversation and don't use jargon, people are really interested in listening. So absolutely, it's a great opportunity, and we're looking forward to it.
Fantastic. As you've proved this morning, I think. Tell us, when is your session?
So it's on the 26th of October at 2 p.m. and tickets are available, so go away and get them.
As of yesterday.
Excellent. Good
report.
Stuff.
Well, Shiloh, thank you very much for coming in and telling us a little bit more about Super Grains. Just out of interest, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Actually, I didn't. This is my first cup of coffee. I'm thinking about breakfast very hard. It might be oats this morning.
Do you ever have avocado on toast? Or do you
I adore avocado on toast. And sometimes I just have the avocado and just ditch the toast.
Dr. Shiloh Fennell, thank you very much for coming in. Senior lecturer in Development Studies at the Department of Land Economy. And do keep an eye out for her session and many others at the Festival of Ideas. Tickets are available now.
Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover and Lucy Milazzo. Cambridge 105 Radio.